From the Roots Up. CIUT 89.5 FM. Toronto.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to be talking later in the show to Zafar Bengash about the halfway point. And Zafar is a great favorite on the Taylor Report, and he's quite sought after, I would say, worldwide for his knowledge and opinions about what is developing and the background of the events that are in the forefront of the news. So we're going to be asking him particularly a favorite theme of his these days, which is the status of the elected leader of Pakistan, Imran Khan, who happens to be in prison. So the question is, how come the elected president is in prison? And there's other details. And we want to ask him, of course, about matters to do with the increasing tension among the states in the West Asia, sometimes called the Middle East. Particularly, we're thinking of the new player, Yemen, and there's the matter of the Hezbollah forces in South Lebanon, and then the peculiar negotiations going on involving the United States, primarily, which is something we want to get into. Again, it's the Taylor Report. By the way, you can keep on giving to CIUT.FM through June, and we're doing well. We'd like to do even better. So please help us out, CIUT.FM. Donate, and please mention the Taylor Report. I think there's a couple of big events that have happened that are ceremonial, they say, but which you have to look at them closely because ceremonies are a profound form of politics. And I'm thinking of D-Day, which took place. They had the heads of state from the West, primarily. Russia was not invited. So D-Day is celebrating a moment, this one in 1944, of in the war to defeat Nazism. And it was, of course, an occasion for Joe Biden to remind us how fragile he is, I guess. And he's also his confused view of history. Somebody said there's a board game that they're trying to create, and it's called Predict the Past, because actually, at the time of D-Day, the allies were Russia, China, pardon me, well, China too, Russia, China, U.S., Britain, and France, and fighting against, and we can include Canada and Austria. They were all in the war together against Nazi Germany, and they celebrated each other's victories. Churchill was ecstatic. I'll repeat that. He was ecstatic at probably the most significant battle in World War II, the Battle of Stalingrad. And no more, of course. Now we have these gatherings of people who head these states, and they don't celebrate these things. What they do is carve it up and create a false picture. And we need to keep our eye on the truth and ask how come we lose track. And the Russian leadership pointed out in their remarks about D-Day, they say, we celebrate D-Day. We always congratulate our allies on a tremendous victory of landing on the coast of Normandy, a 50-mile beach, spread of 50 miles. The allies, primarily led by the U.S., U.K., and they say We have no problem with that. Why do you have a problem mentioning that we were your allies and that we did this together and it could not have been done without being allies? Of course, the question answers itself because now we have gone into this mode of demonization, falsification, and it leads to scrambling the brains of the population to the extent that they can do it. We should resist that. We should make it our business to understand what did happen, D-Day, the Battle of Stalingrad, and out of which grew the United Nations, which the world desperately needed and needs. That would be a theme of ours, actually. It was a creation of the victors. It's, in fact, you know, there's no question. The victors said, this is the kind of world we want. And we are going to respect the sovereignty of countries. We're going to insist on negotiated problems. Every crisis will be handled in some way in order to avoid war. And fact is, here we are all these years later, it has, as clumsy as it is, largely worked. But the U.S. and its allies have wanted to create their own world. And increasingly, their world, which they called the world, by the way, is smaller and whiter and more English than before. And this is not a... This has been a very unhealthy and dangerous path. And they, instead of correcting themselves, the situation is becoming worse. Another matter to mention with D-Day, that it should, for the French, the word, the D should stand for de Gaulle. Charles de Gaulle was the leader of the Free French. And he was not told that there was going to be a D-Day invasion until 2 days before it happened because his allies didn't trust him. And we don't know about that. We don't discuss it. But do you think the French don't know? That isn't a widely known issue of how come they, who were, of course, inundated with a Nazi invasion and lived under Nazi occupation, and really, having the worst of humanity, the Nazis, stand on their chests for years before the Allies landed, it is, why wasn't that ever corrected in terms of an apology or whatever? But Charles de Gaulle never attended any D-Day event because he wanted to remind everybody he hadn't been invited, and he wasn't part of the preparation. The United States at the time, check your history books, I've just been looking at it, was thinking of doing a flat-out occupation of France without any de Gaulle. Their thought was, we'll take over the place and then we'll sort them out and we'll decide who is going to lead France. But they realized that the French population and GIs from the war, documented in conversations about what they saw and felt, they said the French accepted their arrival but were unhappy about the way it all came about. So that's just something to remind everybody that D-Day should not be falsified, and indeed now is the time to look into it and how you could, with a straight face, celebrate an important victory of the Allies of World War II who created the United Nations, how you could do that and not have that ally present simply for pictures and handshakes, minimally. That way the world would be confident that you're not going to, you know, tear each other up. But there is no large leader in the West who will set that course. Charles de Gaulle would have, because Charles de Gaulle was had a vision of Europe. He had a vision of the world, which and it conformed to the United Nations. And he behaved like an independent national leader, and that irritated everybody. What they wanted was someone like Sarkozy, who wanted to be an American, and anything American was okay by him. And we have this odd character today, Macron, who nobody quite figured out. I guess he's called a technocrat, but it's a very unhappy situation, particularly now that they're also talking, these allies, about all of them agreeing, and with Canada among the loudest dogs barking, and the Australians too, of give President Zelensky of Ukraine, I don't know why I call him president, he hasn't run for president since he got the job, he's decided they don't need an election. So he's the boss. So boss Zelensky was brought to the D-Day, and they're talking about giving him the type of weapons which, let's underline it, the Russians have said, if those weapons are used against us and resulting in significant damage, we're notifying you, Canada, U.S., that you're part of this war and you are a legitimate target. So we're living with a bunch of glib and superannuated and foolish leaders who actually say, wall that off and say, don't you dare listen to anybody's voice but ours. Don't you use TikTok. We'll have you arrested. We're going to arrest anybody who created the thing. So they're trying to seal us off from the rest of humanity, which because that would mean that we had to involve ourselves in diplomacy and respectful discourse. And if the Western powers engage in what would be called respectful discourse, they would be admitting that the people of the world, particularly the southern part of the world, are their equals. And they don't believe that. They are the masters. They've always been the masters. And they don't intend to live in a world where they have to explain themselves or to be nice or to not threaten. That's not the world they want to be in. They want to be the world where we can hurt you and we will. That's where we are, actually, with the situation. So anyway, that underlined, think about Charles de Gaulle. Think about Stalingrad when you think about D-Day, just so you won't lose your mind. Now, another day that we had that was ceremonial, Victoria Day, and I'm really sorry that Taylor Report didn't comment on it earlier, but usually we remind listeners to the Taylor Report and CIUT on this matter. I'm sure that Democracy Now! Would, Amy Goodwin would agree, it's important. There's a story here. Do you know what Victoria Day is called in Quebec? Time's up. I bet you don't. It's called Patriots Day. It's called Patriots Day. Victoria Day. The one where, you know, we all celebrate the great world that Victoria was the mother of. And the great English system, which, where the sun didn't set on that empire. But in Quebec, it's called Patriots Day. And the people, the Patriots were the leaders of the Republican movement. By Republican movement, I mean anti-monarchist Republican movement of Quebec, who rose in 37 and 38 in rebellion against the I won't be able to say that today. The monarchy, anyway, the British system. And many died. It was eventually put down. Incidentally, in what was called Upper Canada, that is, say, Ontario, also joined in. And we have one little building in Toronto, which is preserved. It's William Lyon Mackenzie's office, where he had a printing press, which was removed by Tories, and they threw it in Lake Ontario. But he was part of the rebellion. But the heaviest fighting, where you really had a mass popular movement and an armed struggle of great significance and magnitude, which was put down in 38 by the British. Leaders, several of the leaders, were captured, and they were hanged. So when we're celebrating Victoria Day in English Canada, they're celebrating Patriots Day and recognizing those people who rose up against an autocratic order where you had a tiny ruling class dominated by the English. They rose up against it to try to establish a republican system. And in Quebec, that's important. So they call it Patriots Day. So when you're watching the Blue Jays and you see that little beginning of the ball game and they say, one team, one nation, that's a childish joke. It's a bad joke. It's actually, somebody should bring a lawsuit and say you can't say that, because the Canadian Parliament recognized by a unanimous vote that Quebec is a nation. It is a part of Canada, but it's a very special part, and it's a result of a fight between empires, the British and the French, and the compromise led to the recognition that we have the French language and we have French culture and religion. At that time, there was a major point. So that was established. So we're not one nation. And by the way, the Montreal baseball fans are not tuned in every night to watch the Blue Jays. If they have a favorite team, it's probably the Red Sox, I guess. Somebody nearby that they like. So even Patriot Day, pardon me, I should say, not Patriot Day, Victoria Day, as we call it, needs to be gotten rid of. And incidentally, I have to say, there is talk about it. And full credit to those who are saying maybe we ought to be a little more Canadian. But if we are, that's going to have to involve French-English issues, Indigenous issues. But Victoria Day is a little bit out of date. I mean, I don't want to put Victoria in a box the way we had to do with John A. Macdonald, which is a bit of artwork in front of Queen's Park. I think it's great. I hope we preserve that. I think that's an accidental artifact, a box. And you say, what's in the box? We got this racist, reactionary guy in the box, and that's great. And that it tells a little story in itself. So I had to go down and make sure the box is there. I think we ought to have the soldiers march around for the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and keep guard. And I think we ought to ask the leaders of the indigenous communities to have a small militia for parades purposes, and or any size they like, actually, but largely ceremonial, as they have it in all the capitals of the world, who could stand guard over Macdonald to make sure he doesn't get out. That would be the assignment, 24 hours, where there would be someone on either side of the box, and then every four hours they are relieved by the next guy. And they, of course, would be in indigenous dress, and it'd be great. And by the way, for entrepreneurs out there, anybody thinking of helping, you could probably it'd be a great tourist attraction. I think indigenous people would come from all over, take some time, have their picture taken in front of the box where guard duty is being marched by the indigenous squad, militia, whatever. Anyway, that's just a helpful thought. I know everybody they can't wait to have helpful ideas. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. I'll remind you again, listen, CIUT.fm, and you can continue to give and put us over. Maybe you could double our income on this term. We were shooting for 100,000. I'm sure we're going to make that, but what the heck, we have the rest of June, so make it 200,000 if you can. We should, I want to call out we have a new president of Mexico. Her name is Claudia Sheinbaum. And she's the first woman elected president in North America. I'm looking at you, Democrats, Republicans of the USA. She, by the way, with a landslide victory, she is a climate scientist. Of course, as I've already mentioned, she is the first woman elected president in North America. She's also Jewish. There's a whole bunch of stereotypes of Mexico going up in smoke as I speak. And she presides over a country that doesn't belong to NATO. And they don't go to bed every night saying, oh, boy, give more weapons to that guy, Zelensky. They do not say that. Our foreign minister says it, and prime minister and others, whole parliament, they just fall over each other to say such stupid things. But the president of Mexico says, you know, they're simply for a negotiated agreement. They're in no way enamored of the Mr. Zelensky, who hasn't been elected, refuses to have an election, has locked up his political opponents. But we think, anyway, he's a shining example of who we are. And by God, I think that's true. He is a shining example of who we are. So here you have a brilliant person, everybody agrees, a climate scientist, Jewish, and a woman. And they're not members of NATO, and they don't want to be in NATO. Because they understand that forming blocks that confront other blocks could get you seriously harmed and really won't do anything to make a better and more cooperative world. We should be following Mexico, following them in terms of their political development and their understanding of the world. But Canada cannot break out. Canada is a member, charter member, of an outfit called Five Eyes. Think about Five Eyes. Five Eyes is a white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant formation, intelligence formation, which shares intelligence among them. They call a meeting. Nobody else is invited. The French, actually, under Sarkozy, who loved them and kissed up, didn't get to come. He said, I'd like to come. No. They said, sign on the door, it's English only. What do you speak? So he was not allowed. So there's five of them. And they do little things like this. And this is a fact, simple fact. Sometimes one of the Five Eyes has a problem in their own country. And they say there's a group or a position or something going on that we don't quite like, and we want to look into that. But of course, we have certain constitutional obstacles to be spying on our own people. You know what the Five Eyes do? They ask the other guy to come and do it for them. And then when they've gathered the information, give it to us or give it to the Americans. Incidentally, you do understand you're not children, that the most powerful leader of the Five Eyes is the United States. So there's no file that lands on anybody's desk that doesn't end up on the American desk. So the Americans will decide whether you have a problem. If you come to them and say, this is a problem, and they say it's not a problem, you go home. You didn't have a problem. They just told you that's not a problem. So that's the Five Eyes, and it's a gang. Which leads me to the fairy tale that we have problem with foreign interference. Who told us that? The Five Eyes, which is a festering sore of foreign interference. Our intelligence people are meeting continually with foreigners and sharing information, which is not shared with us. It's definitely shared among them, where they determine whether you have a problem with somebody or not. And of course, this is a military-like concept. They will set the agenda of who should be spied on and who is the enemy. And incidentally, we don't have an enemy. We all know the little secret is we're talking about China or we're talking about India. And they say, well, there might be, there is, and people are, we have to daily papers using the word traitor about members of parliament who've never been accused of anything. All we have is blabber from people who want to get us into a hysterical mood and suspecting each other. Here's how a democracy works. If you think you and the NDP or you and the Bloc or you and the Liberal Party, if you think that someone in a riding where you want to be a candidate is working for a foreign power, well, go ahead and say so and then have an election, because the people might vote for that person whether you like it or not. The Americans went through a thing called McCarthyism. Richard Nixon and his pals said that the Democratic Party of the United States was the party of treason. The party of treason is what they called them. And we have a conservative party who's trying to put that pin that tail on the liberal donkey. They're going to try to make them the party of treason. And they want to do this. And how do they know that there's treason involved? The way they know is that someone somewhere in the intelligence apparatus, has said there might be something. In other words, Canada's concept will be that you don't have a democracy unless the secret police say you do. They're the ones who know who should be in office. They're the ones who know who should be driven in out of public life by using innuendo, smears. But in a democracy, it's very simple to solve. Just have an election. Let the person stand and say what he stands for, and the people can vote. And by the way, if they vote for the guy that the intelligence people think is a criminal, that is their choice. You cannot say you can't vote for this person. If you believed in democracy, if they stand and say, here's what I'm for, look at my record, here's what I've done, then that's how you judge them. And there's none of these people that they're gossiping about in the Liberal Party primarily has ever done anything except vote along with their caucus and vote with their party. So either the party's right or not, and so people can decide. But they're pretending that you have some sort of dark process going on off stage. Just keep your eye on the prize. What does the party stand for? What do they do? And then you can vote. But they want to say, no, you don't do that. You call the secret police and you ask the secret police to tell you who the bad guys are. Or the worst of all, and I hate every party that's involved in this, to say that the secret police, CSIS, RCMP, they can visit a member, elected member of parliament, and tell him things, or her, about who they're meeting. Well, that's none of their business. And clearly, that's intimidation, it's manipulation, and it's also based on nothing. Because if you can't take it to court, then all you are is a gossip monger. But you can see that Canada can't wait to become extremely hysterical on the issue of so-called foreign interference. But meanwhile, they take all their direction from Five Eyes. This is the Tate Report. I think we're going to hear some interesting music from a guy named James McMurtry, son of Larry McMurtry, who wrote Lonesome Dove.